Hello, and welcome back to Surgery 101, the podcast series brought to you with the help of the Department of Surgery at the University of Alberta. This is the fourth episode in our series on inflammatory bowel disease. In the previous 3 weeks, we've heard from Dr. Lana Bistritz, who's given us an introduction to IBD, then talked about medical management, and then about management with biological agents. In this episode, I'll be talking about the surgical approach to inflammatory bowel disease, and then we'll be following this up with episodes specifically about surgery in Crohn's disease, surgery in ulcerative colitis, and ileoanal pouch reconstruction surgery. So this week I'll be starting off to describe some of the elements of the surgeon's approach to performing surgery on patients who have inflammatory bowel disease. I'll be listing some of the challenges associated with IBD surgery. I'll be describing the differences in the surgical approaches between ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. And I'll be outlining the goals of surgery in inflammatory bowel disease, discriminating between emergency surgery, urgent surgery, and elective surgery. So, let's get our scalpels out and get ready to think about surgery for inflammatory bowel disease here on Surgery 101. So let's start out by considering the role of surgery in the treatment of inflammatory bowel disease. And I guess the first thing that's important to say is that surgery is not the first line treatment. So if someone has a relatively mild colitis or a relatively short segment of Crohn's disease which responds to treatment with medical agents, especially simple medical agents, so not steroids perhaps or immunomodulators or biological agents, then that's great. If someone can be maintained on Pentasa or Azacol, that's just wonderful. And they don't need to have surgery. And there are lots of patients with inflammatory bowel disease who don't need surgery and who haven't had surgery, and that's just wonderful. Really, surgery is for people in whom medical management isn't working, or in whom medical management is working, but the side effects of that medical management are severe enough that it can't continue in the long term. I'll talk about this in a bit more detail later on, and we talk about some of the indications for surgery. But essentially, the thing to remember is surgery is not a first-line treatment, surgery is a second-line treatment. We only go there after medical management has failed. I should talk a little bit about the differences in the models of care in different countries. I'm familiar with care, of course, in the UK and in Canada. And in the UK, it's very typical for a surgeon to be in charge of the whole thing. So they'll start medical management. Perhaps they'll go up to steroids. Perhaps they'll go to immunomodulators or biological agents. And if those fail, then they'll take the patient for surgery. Then they'll follow the patient up after the surgery and manage their medications as well. And this can lead over the years to you having a very large practice, because you've got patients that you've operated on, that you're following up and managing their medications as well. And some of the places where I trained, we were prescribing methotrexate and Imuran in the post-operative phase, and it's a very large commitment to have to do that. In North America, it's much more common for gastroenterologists to run all of the medical care, and then the surgeons only get involved when surgery is required. And that's the way that I practice at the moment. So for instance, Dr. Bistritz might see a patient and try all the different medical therapies. And if they don't work, then she gives me a call. I come and do an operation. I follow the patient afterwards, make sure they recover, perhaps see them maybe at 6 weeks after the surgery to make sure everything is healed up okay. And then I'll pass them back to Dr. Bistritz again, and she'll take their medical care on from there. And I generally wouldn't see them again unless they need to have surgery again in the future. Both models of care have their proponents and their advantages and disadvantages. Personally, I like the North American model of care because it keeps things quite simple. It allows me to focus on the surgical side of things and means that I don't have to worry too much about doses and side effects of drugs like methotrexate and Imuran. So let me talk for a minute about my approach to inflammatory bowel disease surgery. I sometimes think of inflammatory bowel disease like it's a fire, a bit like I said in the episode a little while ago on pancreatitis, like your bowel is on fire, it's burning, and it's making you sick. And the point of medical management is to try to put that fire out so that you can feel better again. The trouble is that sometimes medical management can't quite put the fire out. The embers are kind of still glowing and smouldering, and the disease is ready to come back whenever you stop the medical management. And you often see this with patients on steroids, for instance. The steroids damp down the inflammatory response so that you feel better for a while, but as soon as you reduce the dose in the steroids or stop the steroids again, the fire flares up again. We actually talk about it flaring up. We're having an IBD or a colitis flare up, like the disease is heating up again. So surgical management of IBD is quite simple in concept. If we can't get the fire to go out completely with medical management, the intent of surgery is to excise, to get rid of that piece that's on fire so that you feel better again. And when I speak to people who are going to be having surgery for acute colitis, I often say, well, it's your colon that's on fire. It's making you sick, and it won't make you sick anymore once it's out of your body. And that's why I consider surgery for ulcerative colitis and for Crohn's disease as well to be like first aid surgery. Your patient is sick, the bowel is on fire, we're going to take it out and get rid of it so they can get better. It's not very complicated. Although medical management of inflammatory bowel disease has advanced a lot in the last few years, and it does save a lot of patients from having to have surgery, I think most surgeons would agree in those patients who do come to operation that the disease we're operating on is slightly more severe, and it may be that those medical agents are delaying surgery a little bit and are perhaps masking how severe the disease really is underneath. Let's talk a bit about what it's like to actually operate on inflammatory bowel disease. I mean, think about it. It's your bowel and it's inflamed. So when you're operating on this piece of the bowel that's inflamed, the wall is thicker than it should be. It might be narrow or stenosed as well. It may be perforated. It's often stuck onto other organs or other pieces of the bowel. Sometimes the bowel's all matted together in one large inflammatory mass. Sometimes there's a fistula as well, where the bowel is stuck onto something else. Often the mesentery can be challenging, so the blood supply is affected as well. So the mesentery is much thicker than it should be. It's really very unpleasant. It's often easier to operate on patients with colon cancer than with inflammatory bowel disease, because at least in colon cancer, the planes are generally preserved. Obviously, if the cancer is invading into something, that's difficult. But when you're away from the cancer, the planes can be seen and the normal anatomy is there. Often with inflammatory bowel disease, that's not the case. The planes are distorted by all the inflammation. Everything is kind of stuck to everything else. And the inflamed bowel has an excellent blood supply and bleeds whenever you go near it. That means when you're considering doing surgery for inflammatory bowel disease, you've got to be prepared for a wide range of intraoperative challenges, and you've got to be able to think on your feet and come up with a number of strategies that can get you out of the problems that you're likely to encounter. This is why IBD surgery is a good challenge for the general surgeon. You've got to be able to handle peritonitis and infection. You've got to be able to handle obstruction. You've got to be able to handle bleeding. You've got to be able to handle fistulas. And you've got to recognize that some of the patients you'll be operating on will have been malnourished for quite some time because of their IBD and will have lost a lot of weight and won't heal very well. You've got to bear all this in mind when doing IBD surgery. So what about the differences between surgery for Crohn's disease and surgery for ulcerative colitis? And I will come on to talk about these in more detail in the next couple of podcasts. Crohn's is transmural inflammation, whereas ulcerative colitis is just submucosal inflammation. And operatively, that often means that I find the Crohn's disease bowel is more inflamed and more stuck together and more horrible than the ulcerative colitis colon. Also, obviously, for ulcerative colitis, it's only the colon that's affected, whereas the Crohn's, it could be anywhere at all in the GI tract. And that makes dealing with Crohn's a bit more complicated, especially if it's in the upper GI tract, like in the stomach or the duodenum. Also, some of the complications of Crohn's disease don't apply so much in ulcerative colitis. So things like obstruction, things like fistulation occur much less commonly in ulcerative colitis than in Crohn's. I'm not saying surgery for UC is easy, I'm just saying sometimes operating on Crohn's disease can be more challenging. Let's talk about the three main sorts of indications for surgery in IBD. There's emergency, there's urgent, then there's planned. So the emergency ones are very straightforward. Really, this is somebody who's got an urgent complication of their disease. So this most commonly would be perforation, say, somebody with a Crohn's segment that's perforated, or somebody with a toxic megacolon in ulcerative colitis, or perhaps somebody with torrential bleeding from IBD. And really here, surgery is life-saving. It's about dealing with infection. It's about getting the bleeding stopped. And that's emergency surgery in IBD. Then there's urgent surgery. This is for people who are sick. Perhaps they have a bad flare-up of their ulcerative colitis. Perhaps they have a bad obstruction with Crohn's that hasn't been settling. Their medical management has failed. And they need the surgeon to come along fairly urgently and kind of get them out of a hole. The place where I trained in Belfast, we used to have a big Friday morning ward round, and we go and see all the patients in the hospital who were having medical management of their acute flare-ups. And by the end of that Friday morning ward round, we'd often have picked up two or three urgent colectomies that needed to be done over the weekend for patients who clearly weren't getting better and where surgery had to come in and kind of save the day. So that's urgent surgery in IBD. Third type of surgery in IBD is planned surgery. So really this is a patient who's actually in fairly good condition, who's not terribly sick, no peritonitis, no bleeding. So it's not an emergency. They're not really decompensating. They're not having a massive flare-up. They're not failing to respond to medical treatment. So they're not urgent, but they need surgery anyway. And really this is perhaps the person who's become steroid dependent. So they get a good response when they're on steroids, but every time when they try to come off them, they get their symptoms come back. Or it's somebody who's got a high risk of cancer associated with their inflammatory bowel disease. Or it's somebody who actually has developed a cancer in a segment of inflammatory bowel disease. So that's really the planned indications, people who want to get off medications, people who either have a cancer risk or a cancer itself associated with IBD. So let's finish up lastly by talking about the general goals of surgical treatment in IBD. So obviously in that emergency setting, the first goal of treatment is to preserve life. So we've got to control infection, we've got to stop bleeding, we've got to relieve obstruction. Second goal is, if possible, to preserve bowel length if we can. We'd quite like to be able to preserve as much bile as possible, especially for somebody who has Crohn's disease. We don't want to be operating again and again and again because the length of the small bile is finite. That's an important goal of treatment, to try and preserve the length of the bile that's in there, especially in a young person who's going to be having a lot of surgery potentially over the course of their lifetime. The next consideration is reconstruction versus stoma. Obviously, no one really wants an ileostomy or a colostomy. As surgeons, we try and do as much as we safely can to join everything up inside to avoid giving people a stoma. But sometimes, especially in cases of severe disease, and I find especially in bad Crohn's disease, an ileostomy or colostomy really is the only sensible option to control infection and avoid further problems. And unfortunately, that's sometimes a permanent situation. So that's an important outcome, stoma versus reconstruction. Another important goal of treatment has to do with quality of life, and this connects with what I just said about patients who have to have a stoma. I have a number of patients who are on medical treatment for their inflammatory bowel disease who come to me and they say, I don't want to take this medication anymore. I don't want all the horrible side effects. I just want surgery. I want rid of this thing and I want to move on with my life. That's a very individual decision for each patient, and it's important to try to help them to decide, do they want to manage this long-term condition on long-term medications, or would they rather go through an operation which has the potential to get them off a lot of the medications that they're currently taking? The last goal of treatment, and it's important not to forget about this one, is that inflammatory bowel disease, like Crohn's colitis or ulcerative colitis, is associated with a long-term risk of colon cancer. if you've had a patient who's had a significant colitis on treatment for more than about 8 or 10 years, they need regular colonoscopy to check their colon out to see are they developing any premalignant or dysplastic masses, and if they are, they may need to have their colon removed. So, the goals of surgery again, preserve life, preserve bowel length, consider stoma versus reconstruction, consider quality of life, and reduce cancer risk. So, let's summarize IBD surgery in general. Surgery is not first-line treatment, it's second-line treatment when medical therapy fails. There are different models of care, but they all require surgeons and gastroenterologists to work closely together. Next, think about IBD as being a fire that's burning in the bowel. Medical management tries to put it out. Surgical management is aimed at taking it out. Remember, there are a range of operative challenges associated with dealing with inflammatory bowel disease, such as peritonitis, obstruction, bleeding, fistula formation, and malnutrition. Crohn's can affect anywhere, often with obstruction and fistulation. Ulcerative colitis typically only affects the colon, and obstruction and fistulation are less common. Remember the difference between emergency surgery for IBD with peritonitis and bleeding, urgent surgery in those patients who have failed medical management and need rescue, and then planned surgery in those patients who are medication dependent or who have a cancer risk or an actual cancer. Lastly, remember the goals of surgical treatment are preserve life, preserve bowel, stoma versus reconstruction, quality of life, and reducing long-term cancer risk. That's it for another episode of Surgery 101. Thanks for listening. As I always say at this point in the podcast, please visit us on our new website at surgery101.org. You can send us an email, surgerypodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Also, please use our new feature, Surgery 101 Network, which lets you share resources or ask a surgeon a question or request new episodes. You can also buy the Surgery 101 app, which is just 99 cents for your iPhone or your Android phone, or you can help us by subscribing to the cheapest surgery textbook ever, Surgery 101 Notes, which is just $5 per year. You are probably going to spend more than that on your coffee in the next couple of days, and supporting Surgery 101 Notes and the Surgery 101 app helps us to keep going and helps us to keep bringing excellent new episodes to you every week. For example, next week's episode is focused purely on surgery in Crohn's disease. We'll be taking some of the concepts I talked about in general this week and going into them in a bit more detail in the case of Crohn's. So, thanks for listening. Please keep in touch, and we'll see you back here next week on Surgery 101.